This is the Bearcast, presented by Bird Cultian Ford. Bird Cultian Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoke and Grayson Grundhaver.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into a brand new edition of the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com this week of January the 17th, 2021. A lot going on in not only football, but also men's and women's basketball. We'll touch on all three sports throughout the podcast today, and some big transfer news to start off the podcast this week. But I'm Craig Smoke, Sikkim 365 radio host, also a writer for Sikkim365.com, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver, director of broadcasting, also team and recruiting reporter for Sikkim365.com. And Grayson, another week of the transfer portal. We'll touch on how Baylor was affected by that this week. One player coming into the program, another player we officially know where he's going to be going now, and we'll talk about that. But your thoughts this week as we enter another chapter and another week of the off season, another week of basketball, and yeah, another week of just recruiting craziness.
Yeah, kind of an up and down week, to be honest. I mean, really cool news out of the transfer portal. Obviously, y'all were able to have Jackson in studio, so we're going to talk about him. Really, really cool to see that. The basketball side of things not going so well. I know we're going to talk about that. How can Scott Drew and these guys get back on track? And then the other news in football that is always really cool for me is, you know, the early enrollees arriving, and that happened this week. And, you know, I built a good relationship with a lot of these guys. And so to see them finally get on campus and finally get to start their Baylor journey, there's seven of them, I believe. And then of course, Jackson, I think, is number eight. So that's obviously a really cool time for me as well. So overall a good week, but obviously some negatives here and there with the people a little bit upset about basketball right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, people got very used to a certain thing, and that was winning in basketball the last year plus, really, and to experience not only one loss but back-to-back losses. It's been a little bit of a different type of pill to have to swallow for the first time in a while, but we'll get to that in short order. We will start off with football this week. Not a ton of notes to cover. The search for a wide receivers coach continues. Colt Barber had a note up on the interview process and kind of where they are in terms of getting interviews started and what that timeline may look like. You can check that out over at the premium section on Sikkim365.com. But that's going on in the coaching side of things. And in the transfer portal, you mentioned his name a couple of times. Jackson Player, former Midway defensive lineman, former Midway star standout on that D-line and a team at Midway there at the end that got all the way to the state championship game, fell to a very good team. What was that? Cy Fair, maybe, out of the Houston area. That was just a game that, I don't know, for a Midway team that kind of seemed like a team of destiny, just did not go their way. They had a very bad first half and had to try and dig themselves out of a hole. But Jackson Player was a tremendous, you know, just force there up front for that Midway defense for a while, it seemed like. I mean, felt like we were covering him for like 4 years or so. But he was a tremendous player. He goes to Tulsa because he was too short for a lot of programs, just around 6 foot, maybe a shade under, whatever he is. It wasn't tall enough for most programs to just pop on the tape and go like, yep, he's still good enough, we'll still take him. So he ends up with a plethora of offers from, you know, your UTSAs, your Rices, your teams like that. And Louisiana was a school that had offered him. You know, the Texas States, those types of schools, North Texas.
Incarnate Word.
Like all the non-Power 5 Texas schools basically offered him. But the Power 5 schools stayed away. He goes to Tulsa, has a tremendous four-year career there, and decides to enter his name in the transfer portal as a grad transfer. Grayson told us yesterday on Sikkim 365 Radio that he let Philip Montgomery know, and Montgomery was obviously disappointed, but understood. Hey, he had done what he had signed up to do as walking away with you know, a degree and all of that. But he enters the transfer portal, and for a guy who didn't have any Power 5 offers, he's all of a sudden choosing from Arkansas and Oklahoma State and Oklahoma and TCU and hometown Baylor. And on Sunday night, he made his decision, and it was, in fact, the hometown Baylor Bears. Jackson Players coming back to Waco to finish his college career, and will be playing just, you know, stone's throw away from his mom's house and where he used to play high school ball and all of that. Your thoughts on the big man, Jackson Player, pledging to come back home to Waco and be a member of this Baylor football program?
Yeah, I have to say, about early in the week last week, I would have told you Arkansas was the favorite. They really had done a nice job recruiting. And if you've been following the transfer portal side of things, Arkansas has done a nice job in the transfer portal. And so heading into his visit with Baylor, I think there was a lot of speculation that he was going to end up being a Razorback. But I think that visit and getting to meet with Sean Bell and Dennis Johnson and get to talk to those guys on campus and Dave Aranda and really get a feel for the Baylor program under those guys and getting to know the program as it is now. I think the biggest thing that he kept saying in his interview with you and conversations I had with him is just that Baylor felt like home. And I mean, it really is home for him. You know, it didn't just feel like home. It actually is home. And so, everything changed when he took his visit to Baylor, and coming off of that visit, he still had an official visit lined up with Arkansas. He went on that visit. But I think going into that visit, it was pretty clear that Arkansas was going to have to do something incredible in order to swing things back in their favor. So he ends up choosing Baylor. One thing that I've noted about him that I think is something you can't, it's not necessarily you can't coach, but it's something that, like, it translates, and that is production. And at every level, he's been productive. In 3 years at Midway, 274 tackles, 50 for loss, 18 sacks, dominant career. At Midway, goes on to Tulsa. I mean, he finished with 138 tackles, 31 for loss, and 8 sacks, most of that coming in his final 2 years. I mean, the guy was tremendous, a first-team All-AAC player his junior year, and then, of course, a second-teamer last year. So, overall, very productive guy. He's about 6 foot, 295. I think he's going to slide into more defensive end. I know he mentioned that to y'all when you talked to him, but I think he's going to play more defensive end. I kind of anticipate that it'll be him, Apuika in the middle, and then Gabe Hall on the other side as the starting rotation, with it being very, very fluid because you have TJ Franklin, Cole Maxwell, and Chidi Obanaya, and even Braden Utley, who have played a ton, who will also be vying for reps. But one thing we know about this defense, they sub in guys like crazy. Jackson's going to have a great opportunity to have a huge impact on this team. And I think depth-wise and talent-wise, him coming in, I think it gives Baylor a chance to have the best Baylor defensive line in the history of the program, which is saying something.
Yeah, it's stout. And to think that that was a group that you went going into last year going like, I don't know, man, are they going to be able to, like, you know, hold up? Do they have the depth? Do they have the numbers? Do they, you know, they have the right players out there to be impactful? And they get the Ika transfer, and that was just a game changer of a whole nother kind. I mean, I don't think we realized. I think we kind of did. We made a big deal out of it, but I mean, still, if you would have said like, "Oh no, this guy's going to help them win a Big 12 title," I don't know if we would have gone that far with it. But certainly, he was a guy you felt like Ika was going to help shore up the D line. Now he's coming back. You know what he can do, and now we know more about Braden Utley, and we know more about Chidi Obanaya, and we know now
Cole finally got healthy.
Yeah, Maxwell had easily his best year, and now, like, you think him coming back, if you would have said that a year ago, people would have been like, well, he's kind of taking up a roster spot. Instead, you're like, hell yeah, come on back, man. And so, yeah, that defensive line group, suddenly with Jackson Player added, is just going to be ferocious. I mean, it's going to have some big expectations going into the next year, but I think those guys should embrace that because they're going to have a very stout group. And, Jackson mentioned that, you know, Sean Bell was a lead recruiter. Dennis Johnson obviously did a great job on him as well, and he enjoyed talking to Dave Aranda. And I think, you know, when you add in just the proximity, being able to be 10 minutes to 15 minutes away from everything you grew up around, and you already have your degree from Tulsa. And matter of fact, what he was telling us yesterday, I think he could have 3 degrees by the time he leaves Baylor. Wow. Because he's, I think, finishing a second degree at Tulsa, and then I think based on what he had talked to with the Baylor's academic counselors, I don't quote me, but he was talking about being able to, when all is said and done, having at least 2, if not 3 degrees, which I told him, I was like, dude, that's freaking awesome. Like, that's amazing. And he had his big number 90 chain on. He did say in the interview, if you missed it, that he knows TJ Franklin wears that number, and he doesn't really know many guys on the team because most of the Midway connections or Temple connections are now, like Ashton Logan, for example, is no longer on the team. He graduated, and there's not any really Midway guys on the team right now. So he's going to have to get to know some guys. But he did say he's going to talk to TJ, try to get that number 90. And if he can't, then he'll, you know, try and earn a single digit, like number 9 or something, or number, I think, no, he said number 0, which RJ Snead had, which we'll talk about in a second. So that number should be available, but I guess that's a single digit as well. So you got to kind of earn that thing. But if that's the biggest problem he has, then that's fine. They'll figure out the number thing, and they'll figure it out in quick order, because I could tell they were fired up to get him, which is an interesting thing, Grayson, because they could have had him 4 years ago, coming out of Midway. And he may mention that Matt Rhule and staff just that his height was an issue, I guess, for them and for many other programs coming out. And just kind of funny now to look up and you see his final five and go, wow, 4 years ago, none of those schools were in on him. And now they're all begging him. And that's just the transfer portal for you. And that's also a testament to what Jackson was able to do over his 4 years. He proved a lot of people wrong.
Yeah, he did. And I mean, he didn't fit the mold that Rhule and their staff recruited. Yeah, and honestly,
they wanted NFL guys, like NFL size guys.
Yeah. And to be honest, I do think even if he was at Midway now, I still don't know if Baylor would have recruited him. It's just the fact of the matter. Baylor doesn't recruit a lot of guys who are right at 6 foot tall. But what he did was prove exactly what he can do. And once you have that tape, you can't argue it. You know what I mean? It's inevitable. The guy can flat out play, and he's going to be a difference maker for this Baylor defense. I'm really excited about this. I think this is one of those additions that a lot of people are saying they don't really need a defense lineman. And while that's true, he just gives them just enormous depth at the position. I mean, they're too deep, is as stout as you're going to get potentially in the entire country. I know, you know, Georgia, there's a few that are ahead of them, but I think this gives Baylor a real shot at having a top 10 defensive line, maybe even a top 5 defensive line ceiling. And when you talk about what they're kind of trying to address on the back end at the cornerback position and also linebackers, they lost a lot. It's huge that at the point of contact, they're going to be so stout. It allows them to potentially be as good defensively as they were this year.
Yep, no doubt. So we've been waiting to see some, you know, movement as far as the roster and the transfer portal goes, as far as players coming in. And now Baylor has their first big addition out of the transfer portal. It won't be the last, but Jackson Player of Midway, now officially a Baylor Bear, and cool to get him in on here in studio yesterday to sit and talk about it live and talk about meeting Aranda and all that. So you can go check that interview over on Sikkim365. .com. Elsewhere, Grayson, they're still in the search for a wide receivers coach, as I mentioned at the top of the show. And Colt had a little like timeline of on interviews getting underway for that position. But since we last talked, they did fill one role, and that was in the secondary. As you know, we knew Matthew Pallage was going to be on his way out to Oregon. A big step up for him, going to be what, co-defensive coordinator out there in the Pac-12. So can't blame him one bit for heading out the door. It's not like Chancey Stuckey, where it was like a lateral move, although you could argue, I guess, Notre Dame's a little bit, you know, more prestigious. And that's fine. So I guess slightly not lateral, but pretty much a lateral move. You're a wide receivers coach here, you're not a wide receivers coach there. Whereas with Pallage, it's like, hey, you're going to be a co-defensive coordinator. Yeah, I mean, got it. So he goes out there. That left Baylor having to search for another secondary coach. And Ronnie Wheat, LSU background, that's where you can find some ties with he and Dave Aranda. He was announced as a new safeties and special teams coach, so filling both of Pallage's roles. And that was made official, I think, just a couple days after we last recorded. So want to make sure we touch on that. He's going to have, you know, a group that is not going to be the most experienced coming back, but definitely has some talent as far as, you know, the safety position. But you lose JT Woods. That right there is alone a pretty big blow. Special teams, though, you got a lot coming back that you should like. So your thoughts, Grayson, on Ronnie Wheat, the new Baylor safeties and special teams coach.
Yeah, and at Nevada, he worked with the linebackers primarily, but I do think he had some work there with safeties as well. 7 years as the LSU a defensive analyst for them. That's, like you said, where the connection with Dave Aranda comes from. Dave Aranda trusts him. And that's a big part of the hiring process for any head coach. And Ronnie Weed is a guy that built up a lot of trust with Dave Aranda, and that's why he was able to get hired. Obviously was an analyst for the national championship team that LSU had, spent the last 2 years at Nevada, and now he's just trying to get things organized on the Baylor side of things. I know he's talked to a lot of the commits, a lot. I don't know if he's talked to the players quite yet, but I know he's talked to some of the commits, and I actually got some quotes on him from one of Baylor's newest commits in the 2023 class, Tyler Turner. They had their initial conversation. He had great things to say about him, just talking about how, you know, communication is key for him. He feels very confident in the success that he can bring to the program. Tyler talking about Ronnie Weed, and just said that you know, Ronnie basically talked about how he's not a scream in your face type guy. He's a guy who's going to teach you and push you to learn and push you to become a better player and get your level of thinking up beyond just, you know, yelling at you for doing something wrong. And that goes in line with everything that Dave Aranda's tried to build as far as the culture and DNA at Baylor. So based on those comments, I feel really good about this hire. I know he's not the flashiest hire, but he's a guy that, again, I think he fits the culture, fits the DNA, and is a guy that I think Dave Aranda has utmost respect for. And when you add that to a program, I think only good things can happen.
Elsewhere, another change news. RJ Snead had entered the transfer portal. We knew that he was going to be moving on to play his final year of eligibility. And or does he have 2 years actually left?
I think he's got one.
Okay, just one.
Well, like Jackson has one, right?
I think yes. Both,
yeah.
Well, Jackson actually should have two because he was a true freshman at Tulsa. So if you have a bonus year, wouldn't he technically have two?
I guess.
He's a graduate transfer.
Right. So,
I don't know. See, this is where you're like, is he a junior? Is he a senior? Is he got 2 years?
I think this is it for both of them. Okay, I think, well, but don't quote me on it.
I think they both plan on it being right, it for both of them. Let's just put it that way. But RJ Snead, RJ redshirted. So, he redshirted, right? Yeah. Jackson did not, though. So, yeah, I don't know. They both plan, let's say, on it being their last years. But RJ Snead did make his college decision. Didn't go through like the whole pomp and circumstance of posting every offer. So we really don't have any idea, unless he does an interview with the Colorado site or something, on kind of what his transfer portal decision-making looked like. You know, obviously Jackson Player, we just mentioned, had five schools in his final five that didn't offer him coming out of high school. So that's pretty crazy. But RJ is going to go to a place where a lot of fellow Texans have gone over the last few years, and some have made their mark, some haven't. Saw where one that went out there is in the transfer portal, and Jarek Broussard, a good little running back who entered, I think, a day or two ago. RJ Snead's going to be heading to the Pac-12 and playing for the Colorado Buffaloes. And, you know, I think of LaVisca Chenault coming out of there, Jarek Broussard, who I just mentioned, and there's been other Texas guys that have gone and played in Boulder here recently. But when I saw him post that, I never really knew what to think. I just knew that RJ had committed to Ole Miss out of high school, thought Texas Tech might be an option because of Joey McGuire, and, you know, whoever else. But he posted that graphic, and I looked at it, and I was like, you know what? Cool fit. I think I like that. Good for RJ. He's going to be a Colorado Buffalo and go play out west. So your thoughts on Snead to the Buffs?
Yeah, this is kind of what I expected, him to go somewhere where he could go and be the number one and go be an alpha in the offense. And so we'll see how it works out. I mean, his time at Baylor was pretty much, he was what he was as a receiver. And I mean, there was, he had great moments, don't get me wrong, but it just seemed like he was the same player from the moment he stepped on the field till his last moment at Baylor, just kind of the same guy, which is fine. And I think at Colorado, he'll be a focal point of their offense and probably do some good things for them. But it's kind of a weird, Colorado's going through some stuff right now. They've lost a lot of transfers this year, and it's kind of been a storyline. I know one of their former players was talking about how they were getting mistreated at Colorado, so really weird situation there. I know Christian Gonzalez, who played at the Colony, he went out there. He's transferred. Mark Perry, who is going to TCU, he transferred. I mean, there's a lot of guys leaving the program, and therefore they're trying to bring a lot of guys in. So hopefully RJ goes there and is able to help stabilize that culture, because what we do know about RJ is he is definitely a very good culture guy for any program.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So wish him the best of luck, and you know, no bad things to say. I mean, he came in, did his job, and I did see where his dad made a comment about, you know, kind of losing his passion and, you know, hopefully being able to regain that. And, you know, kind of looking back, I could kind of see that. I mean, not that like anything stood out in his play or anything, but I can just see where it was a tough 5 years and, you know, you're kind of ready for just a change of scenery or whatever. So, again, best of luck to RJ Snead as he heads to Colorado. And that's it right now as far as guys departing and all of that. Haven't had any others that have entered the transfer portal to my knowledge, and everybody else is who's announced that they're leaving are going to the NFL. And we'll get to, you know, start seeing some of those guys at All-Star games here beginning in the next couple of weeks. So that'll be fun to track as well, because there'll be a boatload of guys, like 6 or 7 guys are playing in All-Star games. So that'll be cool. Elsewhere, so you got guys coming in, going out, what have you. Got Jackson Player coming in, RJ Snead's out, got Ronnie Wheat coming in, Chancey Stuckey's out. And now we've got, you know, a little over a handful of new players coming in as early enrollees, arriving this past weekend, members of Baylor's 2022 class, starting to get their college careers started officially. There's still another signing day, of course, to come here in a little less than a month, or I guess really in about 3 weeks, right? We'll have our second and final signing day. So there will be more guys added to the class at that point. But Baylor's already signed a majority of guys, and now a number of them are officially enrolled, and we'll get to starting classes and working out. And that was one of the things before Jackson Player came over to the studio and joined us yesterday. He was over at Baylor, and he was finalizing his paperwork and getting everything in order to get his, you know, credits transferred and everything else that he needs to do there. He still got some loose ends to tie up in Tulsa. Not a big deal. Just has to finish some things there, and he'll officially be done. But with the Bears, I mean, I don't know what your expectations were for this class, but a good number of guys are officially enrolled. And let's see, you want to run them down one by one, or how do you want to do it?
Yeah, well, I'll just name them. Here are the early enrollees for Baylor from their 2022 class: Kelsey Johnson, Reggie Bush II, Cody Mladenka, Devin Bobby, Corey Gordon, and Armani Winfield. And then the one that I haven't confirmed yet, but I'm pretty sure he'll be on campus likely today, is George Mile out of Utah, of course. And I believe those to be the 7 early enrollees. And of course, Jackson Player will be enrolling, I think today should be the day that he's enrolled, I believe. I think that's how that situation is going to play out. So those are the guys that are going to be on campus for spring football. And it's a pretty good list. I mean, you got 2 tight ends there. You got a couple defensive backs, which is great. Having 3 of those guys with Reggie Bush, Devin Bobby, and Corey Gordon, that's big. And then, of course, Baylor's been looking to add a wide receiver out of the portal, but they also are trying to develop all these young wide receivers. And so to have Armani Winfield on campus, a guy who I do believe could come in and have an instant impact, is massive for his potential and for kind of Baylor's outlook on this season. I also think that, you know, getting him on campus allows Baylor to kind of figure out, okay, do we need a wide receiver out of the portal? You know, can we survive on these young guys? Are these young guys going to be ready? And if so, then maybe they won't take one. I still think there's room for them to probably take a veteran. But if not, that means probably really good things about Armani Winfield.
And I would think Hal Presley and a bunch of other guys as well.
Javon Gibbs. Yeah, there's some really good ones. The older guys, Jalen Ellis. I mean, there's a lot of guys. And, of course, Jordan Neighbors will come in the summer. But, yeah, a lot of proving ground for these young guys for sure.
Yeah, but if they are all – they're just like, no, we don't need a veteran wide receiver. And I think that would bode really, really well.
Yeah.
I need to see who the wide receivers coach is going to be, you know, ultimately. But they're going to have a good crop of young talent to mold and form and get to know. So exciting to get, like you said, some of these guys on campus, especially at positions of need, and get them going early on. So we'll continue to have updates on that. But, yeah, they can all play and spring practices, and we'll get a good look at them here in a couple of months whenever those get underway. Meanwhile, and I think that's it for football, right? I mean, just a lot of other recruiting going on, but you can check out a lot of that chatter over on the board.
Yeah, I guess I'll add one quick note, and just because it has to do with immediate future, is Latrell McCutchen, the Oklahoma transfer cornerback, deciding between USC and Baylor. I don't believe he's made a decision yet. To my knowledge, I have not seen anything posted yet on what he's deciding to do. I still don't know if he's going to enroll in the spring. I thought that was going to be what he was going to try to do. He took an official visit to USC, took a trip to Baylor for a day. Just a weird, weird recruitment, honestly, for me to try to figure out. I do think it's between Baylor and USC, but a lot of conflicting stories. Honestly, a lot of non-stories have been put out there as well. So really an interesting situation. I think the longer this drags out, probably the better for Baylor, because you would think, I think a lot of people are thinking, oh, he'll just follow Alex Grinch and Lincoln Riley to USC. And so far that hasn't happened, despite reports that his visit went so well with the Trojans over the weekend. So I'm still trying to figure that one out. I think Baylor's goal here was to take no more than two transfers in the spring just for their roster construction purposes. And it looked like Player and then potentially McCutchen would be those two guys. If they don't get McCutchen, that's fine. They'll have more room to add in the summer. But he's kind of the last name out there as far as the transfer portal goes for this spring semester that seems to still be very much connected to Baylor.
Yeah, I just looked him up, and he has not made a commitment that I have seen, but he has burned every bridge with Oklahoma that was possible on his way out. Have you seen this?
Yes.
Like, golly.
I love it.
Yeah, he's not going to be welcome back in Norman, it looks like, on his way out, but has not yet made a decision, so we'll see on Latrell McCutchen, one of many names that Baylor's tracking and going after here in the transfer portal. So that should be enough football for you. I mean, we got coaching changes and transfer portal and Jackson Player coming in and RJ Sneed making his destination known. It's probably, you know, the last we'll probably talk about him too much more, but just wanted to make mention of that, and best of luck to him. And yeah, now it's just kind of waiting to see how they close this recruiting class and who they hire as a wide receivers coach and any other, you know, peripheral positions that, you know, have to be filled. But outside of that, stay tuned to the board for more on the wide receivers coach hunt and more on the recruiting side of things as well. But in basketball, a rough week last week for Baylor basketball. The number one, then number one, Baylor men going down twice and going down twice at home. Very shocking to see them lose for the first time in what seemed like, well, forever, quite frankly. Even more shocking to see them do it a second time just days later, but after falling to Texas Tech in a disappointing but pretty thrilling game that came down to the end, Baylor gets their doors blown off for a large portion of the first part of that game on Saturday against Oklahoma State, despite being at home. And eventually towards the end, they're able to make it somewhat of a contest and make it look a lot prettier than it actually was. But this team is not healthy right now. This team is just not quite right now. And I do think that health has a lot to do with that. But they do fall to Oklahoma State. That was stunning to lose to Oklahoma State, and especially at home. And now tonight, on a Tuesday, as we record this, they will be heading into a two-road game week. So they start things off in Morgantown on the road against West Virginia. West Virginia, not their typically ranked self, or maybe the best we've seen from the Mountaineers, but still not an easy team to just, you know, roll over, and definitely not going to do that in Morgantown. So West Virginia, and then you turn around and 3 days after that, it will be a trip up to Oklahoma to see Porter Moser and the Sooners, another team not ranked, but a program that, you know, could very well be when all is said and done. And obviously, Porter Moser is doing a pretty good job there. He's a good coach. So it's life in the Big 12. The fun never stops, Grayson. But now you go into a week where you're going on the road twice, starting tonight in Morgantown, and you're coming off of two losses. Do you think they can prevent it from making it three or four? I don't know. How are you feeling about Baylor men's basketball at the moment? And I should mention as well, before we go on, now number five in the polls. I dropped four spots after taking the two losses last week. So, hey, you lose twice and you're still a top five team, but they could really tumble if they lose, you know, a third in a row or a fourth in a row. So your thoughts on Baylor men's basketball's tough week?
Yeah, I mean, you can't lose games at home. in conference. We know this. If you want to win the Big 12, you have to win games at home. That's why Kansas has won so many Big 12 championships, because they just simply don't lose at home. So now Baylor has an uphill battle, definitely, to win the Big 12, even though there's a ton of parity right now in the Big 12. Lots of teams have taken losses. So the Bears are still very much in it. It's just, it's really discouraging to lose these two games, especially the way they lost them. I mean, they were up 31-16 with 6 minutes left in the first half against Tech. That game, that they should not have lost that game. It was just baffling to me to watch them close out that half so poorly, a 10-0 run. And then they come out in the second half, lay an egg. You have Adam Flagler missing front ends of the 1-1 late in that game as well. They should have won. I mean, even late in the game, they had great opportunities to win that game. And I know a lot of people have been saying, oh, Tech outplayed them, Tech outplayed them. I mean, I guess, but if you really look at the chunks of the game, I did not feel like they got outplayed that badly. The problem is just they gave up some severe runs, and they just simply could not finish the game. And it was just baffling to watch. And then you fast forward to the Oklahoma State game, and truthfully, it was kind of similar, as in they made a great run to come back at the end, but they just simply were not good down the stretch. It's the exact same thing. They were outplayed in the final 2.5 minutes of the game, and that's not what we're used to seeing from Baylor in the recent years. They've been the team that closes games well. So to see them at home close out two games as poorly as they did. I mean, the Oklahoma State game, Oklahoma State gave them every opportunity to win that game at the end. And I mean, the Adam Flagler turnover on a fast break where he should have been able to go up for a layup and he just knocks it off his leg. I mean, just kind of one of those, that how many times out of 10, if he runs that play, is it not a layup?
Yeah.
I mean, it just was one of those things that not great to see. So yeah, they're in a weird situation here. Now, the flip side of this is Baylor can clearly beat every team in the Big 12, home or away. They can clearly do that. I think it's very obvious that when they're healthy, they can absolutely go anywhere in the country and win a basketball game, which gives you encouragement as the season goes on to see, hey, can they go on the road and beat Kansas? Yes. Can they go on the road and beat, you know, Texas or Texas Tech? I believe so. So I think right now it's about getting healthy, like you mentioned. I think they have to figure out a way to... I don't even know how to put this. They have to alleviate stress from their guards, because right now, I love Adam Flagler as a player, but he's a shooting guard and his ball handling has just not quite been there. And maybe it's a factor to do with his hand injury that he's still trying to recover from, but it's hurt them. And when Akinjo left the game, their ball handling was just very poor. So I think we're going to figure out what's going on with Akinjo hopefully soon. I don't know if we've gotten any reports if he's going to play today or not. I'm not sure on that, but we'll see on that. I think LJ Cryer, if Akinjo doesn't play, needs to run the point. And I think that Flagler needs to play off ball. And unfortunately, if they don't have Akinjo for this game, it's going to be very tough for them to win in Morgantown because of the pressure defense that they put on opponents. I just... without your point guard, it's going to make it very tough for them to get the ball across half court. It's going to make them very hard to run an offense without turning the ball over. So I'm concerned if Noah Kendra for this game. The Oklahoma game on Saturday is one that they should win. If they drop the West Virginia game, the Oklahoma game becomes a must win, in my opinion, for them to win the Big 12. They can't drop four in a row. I expect them to go 1-1 this week. If they go 2-0, though, it wouldn't shock me, because that's the team Baylor's supposed to be.
Yeah, supposed to be, but they are trying to get right now, as far as especially health goes. Their guards just kind of decimated by various injuries, and that's not helping matters. But yeah, disappointing week. Tough to lose two at home, and now to have to turn around and go hit the road and try to make sure you don't drown yourself basically this early on, because you're right, you can't dig yourself, you know, four losses already this early in Big 12 play. It would just be crippling, not completely devastating, but hard to see a scenario where they start off like, you know, 1-4, and then they're sitting there like right racing to the title, you know, over the next month or so.
The good news is, though, this seems like it could potentially be a year where the winner of the conference has like 5 losses.
Yeah, but you'd have to only lose once the rest of the way.
If you lose 4 in a row, yeah. But I'm just looking. I mean, yeah, they've lost 2 in a row, but they're still only a game out of first place.
Right.
I mean, they're right there, and they already have a win over TCU, who's 2-1. I think that they're – definitely going to take some losses here soon. I think Kansas will as well. Kansas got lucky to not have two losses because of that goaltending call against Iowa State. So, again, lots of parity in this conference. We're talking about the number 15 team in the country. Iowa State is sitting there at 2-3 and seventh in the Big or eighth in the Big 12.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of parity there. There's going to be a lot of losses. And so Baylor just needs to find a way to go on the road and win one of these games. They have to win one this week to keep pace.
Meanwhile, it was good to see the Lady Bears get a win. They desperately, desperately needed a win, and they got one against Kansas by the skin of their teeth, 82-79. Sarah Andrews had a big game, and Jemai Asbury had some big plays there at the very end, a key threes, free throws to help seal the deal there. Looked very well like they could be on their way to another loss, which would have been just really hard to overcome given just the way they kind of limped into the weekend. But they fought and they got a win and did not shoot very well overall, just 40% shooting. But you know what? They still got a W, and that's really all you can ask for this team right now. It's kind of weird for this to be the position that, you know, women's basketball is in where you're just like, oh, they just need a win. And it's like, you know, duh. I mean, that used to be duh. I mean, they're going to win every single game, right? But different now, and they're, you know, working hard. And so they needed that one, and they got it. And that's all that really matters in terms of, you know, the game against Kansas. Was it was that simple to me. Get a win and just go from there. So they were able to do that, and now they will turn their attention to a home game on Wednesday against Oklahoma State, and then they'll have number 7 Iowa State at home on Sunday at the Farrell Center at 2 o'clock. That'll be an ESPN2 broadcast, so hopefully there will be a bunch of you out there cheering on the Baylor women coming up this week with two home games after going 1-1 last week, after losing 3 out of their last 4, getting that win over Kansas, now get to play at the Farrell Center.
Yeah, and this is a must-win. The Oklahoma State game is an absolute must-win. They cannot lose this game. Oklahoma State's 6-8. They're probably the worst team in the Big 12. They're currently ranked the worst team in the Big 12, according to record. But 1-4, they're coming to your house. That has to be a win. They actually get Tech in West Virginia after the Iowa State game, too. So, honestly, anything less than 3-1 would be a pretty disappointing next couple weeks for this Baylor team. And honestly, if they can win this game and then beat Iowa State, there's a chance that maybe they turn the corner a little bit and start to get momentum towards the end of the year with, like I said, those two very winnable games. And then you got three games against ranked opponents with Oklahoma and then Texas and Texas back to back. So a good stretch here for Baylor to maybe gain some momentum as the season progresses.
Yeah, would love to see it. So Nikki Collin and company got themselves a win. Now trying to make it a couple in a row. We'll see on Wednesday night against Oklahoma State. So anything else notes-wise? I think that's pretty much it. I think we've covered all the bases. No, also spring sports are getting underway, but tennis is like dealt with cancellations and trying to get off the ground. We're going to have, you know, obviously track and field and golf and all sorts of stuff that's going to be going on. Baseball is going to be starting up here, softball as well. So it's going to be fun to get in the swing of spring, so to speak, here over the next few weeks. But let's go to the mailbag and go ahead and wind this episode on down by answering your questions as always. And we'll start off with Scotty B. Would you say going into the next season for Baylor football, the D-line is top 5 in the nation or more like top 10 in the nation?
I'm going to stick with top 10 in the nation for now. I think they have the ceiling to be a top 5 team, top 5 defensive line in the nation. I think, you know, a big factor for them is going to be, quite honestly, what Gabe Hall do they get next year? Do they get the Gabe Hall that ended this season, the Gabe Hall who was so dominant, who looked like, honestly, probably one of the best three, potentially best three NFL guys on the roster, but he's just dealt with so many injuries, dealt with a lot of games where he just wasn't available. And so going into next year, I think he's the biggest key, because you know what you're getting from Apuika, you know what you're getting from Jackson Player, TJ Franklin, Cole Maxwell, Chidi Obanaya, like, you know what you're getting from those guys. But Gabe Hall is the one guy where you go, that guy could be an all-conference guy. And if he is, then yes, Baylor definitely has a top 5 defensive line in the nation. If he's more like he was this year, then I think it'll be more like top 10.
Yeah, I think top five is just ridiculously high. I mean, you start looking around at other D lines like Georgia's, for example,
Alabama.
I think you can A&M. You probably just pick like five SEC D lines and go ahead and put them. But like, no, Baylor top 10. I think that's very fair, and I think there's no, being upset about being outside the top five if you're in that next group of five. And I think they're very probably well within that with the group they got coming back. So very exciting. What's the biggest key for victory for Baylor women's basketball against number 7 Iowa State on Sunday, in your opinion? I don't really have an opinion on this. All I know is just they just need to win games. However that happens, that's all that really matters, is they just need to keep stacking wins and grabbing wins when they can. But as far as the scouting report on how they should do that, I am the wrong person to ask, unless Grayson's got something he can add on to that.
Yeah, I think for Baylor, it's going to be really key for them to kind of, I think they shot the ball well in the Kansas game, and I think that's key. They got to be able to shoot.
Yeah, yeah. That's their bread and butter.
Threes. But where Kansas State really impacted the game against Iowa State, and that was a 3-point win for Iowa State. It was a very close game, back and forth. K-State really got it done in the paint, and they did a great job scoring in the lane. And I think this is a game where Nelissa Smith and Queen Egbo really have to be dominant. I really do. I think they got to rebound well. They have to be a force when they get the ball in the paint, because I do believe that Iowa State is a little soft in there. I think there's room for the Bears to kind of muck up the game a little bit, so to speak, and get more physical with them down low. Because like I said, they're small. And I mean, if I'm looking at the Kansas State game, I mean, Ayoka Lee had 38 points in that game. Nelissa Smith is every bit as good as Ayoka Lee, and I know Ayoka Lee is really, really good player, but I think the combination of Queen Egbo and Nelissa Smith should give them a lot of problems, and I really do think that Baylor's ability to attack the lane should give them an opportunity to win this game.
Yeah, Iowa State currently on top in the Big 12, 5-0 in conference play, number 7 team in the country, only top 10 team. And then you've got Oklahoma, Texas, and Baylor as far as other ranked teams right now in the Big 12. All of them are inside the top 20. So that will be a big game coming up. If they could somehow get a win there, that would be – first you got to beat, Oklahoma State. Yeah. But if you could turn around and beat Iowa State, that would be great for Nikki Collin and company. But we'll see. One game at a time. Anyways, that's also from Scotty. Hopefully Baylor men's tennis can play their first match of the season on Thursday against Nebraska, or even next Monday against Boise State.
Hopefully. Yeah, that'd be nice to finally see them play. They're going to be really good this year. I'm excited.
Bear Coug, first question, which returning player in 22 do you think benefits the most from coming back in terms of developing their NFL draft stock?
Returning player. I mean, I really think that Gabe Hall is the guy that has to be mentioned here. I think Gabe Hall, I don't know if he really had a choice of leaving or not. I mean, it was kind of...
He wasn't getting drafted coming out based on what he's done so far.
So, yeah, I guess him coming back, I think his draft stock could go through the roof if he has a big year. I'm excited for him. I think he could be really good. I think Connor Galvin is in discussion for that as well, and probably Apuika.
Yeah, I think Apu has a chance. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes we can kind of over... value guys on the NFL draft scale, but I would have to think that Apu's a guy that people are taking a long look at already, and certainly by the time he comes out, I think next year, that he'll be high on draft boards if he continues his level of play. So I think he benefits, although he didn't have a choice to come back, did he?
He could have left.
Could he? He already played 3 years?
Yeah, because I think he redshirted. So I think he was a redshirt sophomore. So
yeah, I mean, technically coming back, I think he boosted his stock. I think Connor Galvin might very well have as well. I don't know how much chatter there really was about him outside of Baylor circles, really, in terms of the NFL. I know that was thoughts when he first committed. It was like, hey, this guy in 4 or 5 years can be an NFL guy. But it's great news that I think he's coming back, and that should benefit him playing another year. And, yeah, I think those are kind of probably the top couple of guys. I mean, elsewhere – I don't think like Christian Morgan significantly boosts his stock anybody else.
I think Kalen Barnes could have. He would have came back, but he's gone. But yeah. Gabe Hall is kind of one that I'm looking at and going, I think this guy's a pro, but it's just a matter of, can he put it all together for an entire season, right?
Yeah,
that's what we've been waiting for.
Can he do it before it's too late?
True.
You know,
I mean, he was good this year when he played.
He was. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, the talk about him, though, it's you would think that he's like... even going back a couple years ago when he committed, you'd think he'd be a force, and he's shown flashes of that, but he just hasn't quite, you know, put it all together and broken out, so to speak. Mm-hmm. All right, second question. What offensive scheme are you worried about the most in the Big 12? Perhaps the newer air raid with Kittley at Tech or the reintroduction of the veer and shoot with Levy at OU? I think our defense will keep the score close, but our offense has to keep up with the scoring against teams with those types of offenses. And I brought this up. I think I asked Max Olson about this on the radio show. I think I might have brought it up with you as well. But it's interesting to see that the Big 12 is kind of going back to the air raid, big offenses. You've got the veer and shoot, like you mentioned, with Levy and company, the old Baylor offense. And you've got the plain air raid and with their own twists, of course, with guys like Kittley at Tech. So what do you think about
Sonny Dykes at TCU?
Yeah, Sonny Dykes at TCU.
And then who did West Virginia hire? It was another
Graham Harrell as their OC.
Yeah.
Which I knew about 2 days before it was announced and couldn't say anything, which I was kind of ticked off about. But, and I know that Graham was very thankful to get that call, because after the USC thing, it was like, where do I go?
Yeah.
And that he was kind of in a weird spot. But thankfully, that worked out well. It was a big hire for Neil Brown. It seemed to excite Mountaineers fans. But, yeah, he's obviously an air raid product himself. So.
Right, so a lot of air raid. You know, to be honest with you, I love it for Baylor. I mean, I don't know if you're on the same page as me, but I love the fact that there's all these air raid guys coming into the league, because honestly, I think those are the type of teams that are going to really struggle with Baylor, because Baylor can dominate you up front. And if you're able to take away the run at the very beginning, then these offenses really do have problems. I know air raid, you know, you can throw it around a lot, but in principle, they want to be able to somewhat establish the run and make you respect it. And so I don't think these teams are running against Baylor. And if you're not running against Baylor and you're just going to go there and start throwing it all over the place, you're going to get sacked, you're going to turn the ball over, and most importantly for Baylor, you're going to have very quick possessions. And if you start having multiple three and outs, Baylor's going to turn right around and run all over your defense and control the clock. So I actually love the fact that there's a bunch of these pass-happy, air raid type offenses. I would say the one that concerns me the most is Levy at Oklahoma, and the reason why I say that is because I do think Oklahoma will have the talent to run the ball and will have the talent to spread the ball around and do kind of what they're trying to do offensively, while also having Brent Venables as an amazing defensive mind who I think could bring some of the things that Dave Aranda brought to Baylor for that Oklahoma program. So I would say him, and it's mainly because of the talent level that he's going to have at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think, you know, I think Kittley could very well do a good job, but I also see, like, we're going to play tough, hard-nosed defense, and I'm like, that's not going to pair with Western Kentucky. Like, I watched Western Kentucky. I followed their stats. They had 2 1,000-yard receivers.
Yep.
Their offense was on the field all the time, all the time. Bailey Zappe was throwing the ball 50-plus times. I mean, it was the air raid. It was like, you know, it was the old air raid. And so you can play solid defense, but you're not going to by any means be playing, like, some great defense on the opposite of side of the air raid. And, you know, with Levy and that OU offense, I'm with you. I think just the talent level is what kind of puts that over the top versus, like, really being too worried about the scheme. We do know he'll love to run the football when they can, but it does, you know, need to have a passing game incorporated as well. So, you know, then Graham Harrell out of West Virginia, that doesn't really – I got to figure out who their quarterback is and who their other receivers are and who's left on that roster after all the transfers they had.
TCU's interesting.
Like, TCU could be explosive, but they're going to take a step back on defense, so they're just not going to be the dominant defense that they used to be.
Yeah, and we saw Chandler Morris, so there's some promise there about what he could do.
Yeah, he's surprising again, I'll tell you that much.
But I think that's another team where if they get the talent to the point where it could be at, then maybe, but they're relying on the transfer portal a ton. I think as far as next year goes, I'm honestly not very concerned about these new hires.
I mean, I think there's some good coaches, and I think it'll spice up the Big 12 a little bit, but in terms of being, like, worried, I'm really not about anybody that's done anything. And, you know, even Texas, they've been loading up on transfers, but it's all on offense. So, you know, if Baylor was an offensive school right now, I'd be like, well, gee, they're going to get lost in the shuffle potentially or whatever. But the fact that they're led by Dave Aranda and Ron Roberts and they're more of a defensive mind, I think actually plays into their hands, which I think you were saying earlier well.
And they have the best offense coordinator in the league.
Well, yeah.
And I feel great about saying that as well.
And I think they're going to be a lot better on offense next year too. So I think they'll be still one of the most balanced teams that will be out there in the league. All right, let's see. And Barracuda, I know we talked a lot, but yeah, basically, I'm not really worried about any of them, quite frankly.
And you know, it's funny, we're talking about this, and I'm like, the two best teams in the league are going to, in my opinion, it's probably going to be Baylor and Oklahoma State, who are the teams that had the least amount of change, to be honest. Now, Oklahoma will be up there as well, as they always are.
Texas will be up there as well.
Maybe.
I mean, we know with the preseason polls. I mean, we know how those go.
But I mean, how it actually ends up, I don't know if they're going to be in the top, you know, top conversation. I think it could be similar to this year, but I think they'll be a little bit better.
All right. Stat boy, has anybody heard who Baylor football play in their first game of the season? Nope, haven't heard anything yet. And we aren't going to talk to Mac Rhodes this week because he's got NCAA meetings as they try to sort through.
Right, but a little nugget they did tell y'all was that it will be an FCS team.
Yeah, it's going to be an FCS school. So, yeah, don't get your hopes up for, like, Ohio State rolling to town. They got a model that they like, and it's, what was it, a Power 5, FBS and an FCS or something like that.
Power 5, yeah, exactly like you just said, and they – and he was talking about how it would have been Louisiana Tech and then immediately on the road to play a really good BYU team, which is their quote-unquote Power 5 matchup this year. And then they also have Texas State, right?
So
it allows them to have that FCS opponent like they've had pretty much every year.
So they'll be looking for a layup is basically what they're going to be looking for, and I guess we'll treat BYU like their big non-con game, which it will be. So, yeah, no word just yet, but we'll see. And well, like I said, we won't hear from Mac Rhodes this week because he does have NCAA meetings that they have obviously got a lot going on, the NCAA, trying to figure out transfer portal and name, image, likeness, and all of that stuff. Let's see. Billy 21, disallow all three-point shots by I-State. They will give the Bears at how three-point shooting is done. That's just the way they play. As soon as that bus door opens, they start shooting threes. Yes, indeed, they do. So that was Billy 21. That's how he says the Baylor women can beat Iowa State, I believe, is shooting the three ball.
I thought he was saying that Iowa State's just going to continue shooting threes and that Baylor can do nothing about it.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's how I read it. But
Billy, thanks for signing up to be a premium member.
I mean, that might be true, but that's why I talk about it. They got to be physical in the post. You know, trade two for threes, yeah, that doesn't always work out well, but if you can get enough twos, you have an opportunity to make up for it, play physical defense. So we'll see what happens. I think Nikki Collins got a chance to really prove some things this weekend.
Yeah, she does. She does. Ziwatane Hobert, I attended the premiere of Ode to Joy last week and highly recommend it to everyone. If the Tweety Carter portion doesn't move you, you don't have a soul. Assuming you have seen it, where would you set the over-under on number of sports cries a Baylor fan will have watching it? I did not get to check out the premiere. I had other plans previously that I couldn't get out of, so I was not there. Can't comment on that, but I had heard going in a lot of, and I can't wait to see it. And congrats to everybody that was a part of putting that together. I know there's a lot of hard work, a lot of investment, by you, the members, and hopefully everybody who got to have an opportunity to see it already or will in the coming showings really enjoyed it. But I can't comment on that because I haven't seen it yet. But I did hear that Tweety Carter was quite impactful during his interviews, so I'm not surprised at all to hear that was translated quite well to the screen and to the documentary, and can't wait to see his portion.
Yeah, I wasn't able to see it either. I had another commitment. I'll probably be going to see it in San Antonio or Austin. I think San Antonio one is on February 4th, so I might be able to make it down to San Antonio to watch it, but really excited about it. I heard great reviews. I heard just tremendous things about it. So excited for just everyone who is involved in it. It's really big for us just as a company, honestly, that we were able to be a part of this. So, yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah, it is. And congrats to Brian Ashley and Colt in particular and everybody else, Chris Charles Scott and his whole crew, and Yeah, I hope people who get to see it over the coming weeks really enjoy it. So check out some of those screening dates and, you know, some of the events that are, you know, event screenings they're planning across the state. Like, I know Tyler's got one, right? And you mentioned San Antonio, Dallas.
San Antonio. We're working on Austin one, I think, too.
Okay. So, yeah, definitely stay tuned to the website, especially if you're in those areas, and see if you can't cop yourself a ticket to go check it out. And who knows where it eventually will land. Hopefully, mass distribution somehow or another so that everybody can see it easily. But, yeah, very proud of the people involved. Just haven't checked it out yet, but when I do, as a Watanejo Bear, I will make sure and try to circle back around to your question. But no surprise that the Tweety Move people, I thought that based on hearing people talk about him going in. Bear sack, the spring semester transfer portal activity is a little puzzling for Baylor. I'm excited they got a clear target, a guy they wanted. Obviously, they lost a couple opportunities to NIL money. Do you think Aranda and staff are concerned with what it's taking to pull players, not so much winning and development, but cash? Are you confident they will fill some holes in the summer with a new crop of transfers, cornerback, wide receiver, running back?
Well, I mean, to be clear, we've posted this a million times, but they could only take two guys in the spring. So, I mean, they really didn't have a lot of room to add to the roster like I believe they'll be able to add in the summer. It's okay. Just the roster makeup, they didn't have room to take a bunch of transfers. So they had to be super selective at the beginning of this cycle. They're able to get Jackson Player, who filled kind of a need that they wanted, and he's a best available type guy. So yeah, they missed out on a couple, but I think overall they're sitting in a really good spot. And I think as spring football rolls around and people kind of see where they are on depth charts, you'll be able to see guys move on more. Guys with new coaches, you'll see them move on after spring football as well. So there'll be plenty of guys out there for Baylor to go around and try to add in the later cycle. But I just want to point out, like, they really didn't do bad. They kind of did what they needed to do outside of landing a cornerback in this first part of the cycle.
Do you think he's worried about NIL, Randa, that is?
I think that everyone, if you're not worried about NIL, then you're lying.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a part of every program that doesn't have unlimited money to spend that is going to be a little worried about NIL. I mean, it's happened. I mean, you've seen it happen time and time again with players going to places because of money already. And so, yeah, I think it's something that you have to consider, but I also think it's one of those things where Baylor has a lot to sell right now, and Baylor has a culture to sell right now. And if you want to go to a place and win football games, then you're going to come to Baylor. If you want to go to a place and get paid, then maybe Baylor's not for you.
Yeah, that's going to be a part of some guys' decisions. I mean, I do think Baylor can get involved to some extent, but, yeah, they're not going to pay $50,000 for an offensive lineman. Offensive lineman. Not even specifying, just like, hey, if you're an offensive lineman and want to come play here, we'll give you $50,000. But yeah, I would imagine that it has to be some level of concern when you're going head-to-head, and if the other team's Texas, for example, or A&M, yeah, you know that they're going to put together some funky NIL deal, you know, to pay six figures just to get the commitment. And you know what? That's a pool that some people can swim in and some people can't. So I guess you just pick your battles. And so far, they're using pretty good judgment. Alpha Needle, which fan base is more whiny and entitled, University of Texas or Dallas Cowboys?
University of Texas.
Yeah, I'd say UT.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I think Cowboys fans remember the old days where they were just dominant. And so they think that eventually it's going to come again. Eventually they're going to win a bunch of games. But I think Texas is more so like, we're supposed, like, we are deserving of winning every game we
play.
It's
our birthright.
You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. To win football games, which is really funny. And as a UT graduate, it makes me laugh as well. Yeah. Like, I graduated from both Baylor and Texas, and so I've seen both sides. But the UT side, there's a lot of entitlement over there.
Yeah, that's what's always bothered me about Texas fans. Not anything about winning or whatever. It's this simple, like, winning is my birthright attitude that just, it bothers me to no end. And that's what's always been my number one pet peeve in regards to that. Cowboys fans have more recent success, quite frankly. I mean, at least their championships, they got three of them in the 90s, and that's what all the kind of things are based off of. I know for older fans, it's, you know, Landry and those teams as well. But, you know, UT acts like they're the Dallas Cowboys, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about it, they are very similar in some ways. But, yeah, I'll go with UT on that answer. Doc Crowell, what does the rotation on D-line look like next year?
Yeah, I mentioned this earlier, but I think it's going to be Gabe Hall, Apuika, and Jackson Player as your starting three. And then behind them, I think you're going to have Chidi at the nose. And then on the opposite sides, you have Cole Maxwell TJ Franklin. That's kind of how I view the two deep. And then I think Braden Utley is going to play a big role as well, as we saw this year. He's going to be cycled in, and some games he'll have a bunch of reps, some games he won't have as many, but I think he's going to play a big role on their defense line as well.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens with guys like Josh Landry and some of those younger guys as well. But yeah, I mean, that sounds like it's pretty solid group there.
And I think it allows them to for sure redshirt Devontae Tozino and Trey Emery, and who knows, maybe Cooper Lands and Dakota Doyle Robinson are able to get in there a little bit as well and maybe have a few reps. But overall, I think the two deep is pretty much set now.
Yep, should be pretty solid. What are the biggest reasons you'd hesitate to declare Baylor as the front runners to repeat as Big 12 champs?
I think I need to see what the full roster is going to look like. They still have some holes to fill, so depending on how the transfer portal works out, it might sway my judgment. I mean, I just mentioned to you, I do think Baylor's clearly inside the top three, and I think if you were to if I were to bet money on it, you know, right now I would say probably I do think Baylor is the best team in the Big 12. I really think that they're at the point now where I'm saying, okay, this year they were great on the offensive line, great on the defensive line. Next year they're probably going to be even better at both, which bodes really well to winning the Big 12 conference.
It does. They got some work to do at skill positions, though. They need to find another starting corner, need to find another starting safety, need to find
starting linebacker.
So you need to find some
quarterback.
The entire wide receiver core. Who's your starting quarterback? So there are some things to figure out, but they are in pretty good shape, especially along the two, you know, biggest keys outside of quarterback, which is your offensive and defensive lines, as you mentioned. They're about as good as they've been at those two positions. Separately and grouped together as they have been in
ever.
Yeah, I mean, pretty close to that, if not, like you said, ever. And then finally from Doc Crowell, when would we probably see any more outgoing transfers announced, if any? Don't hold your breath. That's going to be an ongoing process. I would say that you're just seeing the start of it, actually, because we're going to see more over the coming weeks, and then we're going to get into spring ball, and it'll settle down for a second, and then as spring ball rolls along, and especially after spring ball ends, we'll see dozens of players probably hit the portal. Does that sound about right?
Couldn't have said any better. Yeah. That's exactly how I'd see it playing out, and that's why Baylor can be patient. They're going to have spots to work with, I think, on the back half here, and I think they're going to be able to find some really talented guys, and a lot of schools might have already run out of space, and then other schools like TCU have infinite number of transfer spots available. But yeah, Baylor's going to be patient, and they will find some talented guys. I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, remember, when were most of the transfer additions last year? They were mostly around spring ball, if I remember correctly. Well, I know that a couple were like January-ish, but Apu wasn't until what was he?
Apu was a little bit after. I know Drew was on signing day because we talked about
Drew
him
was
on
early.
Signing day. But yeah, I think Apu was in this like
it's spring like post-spring ball,
yeah.
So, I mean, there was a guy who turned around, and I think that, you know.
When was Gall? Gall?
I want to say Gall was a – he was – around for spring ball, I think, but I can't quite.
Let me look this. I can find it.
But it was all like, it was all around like at least starting like the second signing day, I want to say. It was kind of like the ball maybe rolling into spring ball. And then, I don't, it's so hard to remember things now. In post-COVID era, which we're not even in, we're still very much in it, but like, I don't know, I just feel like I can't remember the timelines of things as well as I used to.
Yeah, Grant was around this time. He was January 8th, Grant Miller.
Yeah.
So he was early, and I know Drew was during the, the original sign day. Oh, and Siaki Aika was also during December. So actually, these guys were added. They were all added pretty much.
Jacob Gall, though, was in like May. Jacob Gall was like after spring ball was already over with. So that is an example of what you might see this time around as well. But yeah, I mean, like, right, let's say they got Drew Estrada around this time last year. They got Jackson Player. And then they'll maybe grab another guy or two, like a little Trell McCutcheon perhaps. And then they'll get into spring ball. And then a bunch of guys will figure out what they want to do after spring ball for Baylor and for schools across the country. And a bunch of more guys will jump in the portal. And they'll probably grab one or two out of there. And that'll that'll be all she wrote.
Yeah,
if it's anything like last year.
Yeah, that seems to be kind of the reoccurring theme of how this is going to go. But the transfer portal is much different this year than it was last year. It just continues to grow and continues to be more unique, especially with NIL going on now.
Yep, so Baylor got a big addition with Jackson Player coming home to Waco. Got some other things to figure out and some recruits to try and land, both out of the portal and ahead of National Signing Day number two. Got men's and women's basketball with very important games coming up this week, including tonight, and then spring sports starting to get underway as well. So that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Covered a lot of news, and thanks for your questions as always. Thanks to Armstrong Sims behind the scenes for producing. Thanks to Grace and Grunhey for anything before we go.
No, I mean, I'm excited. I know I recorded this earlier with Armstrong, but I'm going to have a big JT Woods reflection podcast / interview for about an hour and 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. We talked this morning, so that was a lot of fun. I know Sikkim 365 Radio continuing to produce great content. Y'all have had quite a few of the former Baylor players on. You had Jackson Player on live in studio, which was really cool. So I encourage everyone to check that out as well. Every day from 3 to 6. And of course, the premium side, if you want news and notes on recruiting, football, basketball, we have it all. I mean, we really do. Wide receiver coach search is obviously in full gear now, as Colt mentioned. So lots of really good stuff going on for us, and we just continue to try to get better and better.
Yes, we do. So stay tuned to the boards and stay tuned to Sikkim 365 Radio as well. Just saw Caleb Collins, they're riding through Lubbock, apparently, and he saw a tumbleweed. So he posted a video about that. So Baylor coaches are out on the road recruiting right now. Big ones for hoops this week, and we'll talk about it all next week. But thank you for joining us as always. Appreciate you. For Armstrong Sims and Grayson Grunhey, I'm Craig Smoke. This has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.